Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Wild and Unprotected. I'm your host Ethan Lehman, and I'm here with my co-host Koji Somalde.
Hey everyone, welcome back.
I hope everyone's particularly ready for this episode. This is easily the craziest and most off the rails episode we've done. Get ready to laugh and maybe roll your eyes a little bit on this one. Play the intro.
Just toss them overboard when you're sitting having lunch, or, you know, just anything like that.
The classic.
We actually were joking about setting up an OnlyFans account.
Here's to us all swimming through the shit and making more sense of it.
Wild and unprotected. Planet Earth, we can't neglect it. Ah, nature sexy. We need this place, so please respect it.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. Today's guest is Jules Hartle, a PhD student from the University of Hawaii. We're just going to continue.
That's
fine. We're just going to continue with it. Keep it in the show.
Yeah, that's good. That's good.
Yeah, no stress. But yeah, Jules, welcome to the show.
Hey, I'm happy to be here. Thanks, guys.
There's the baby in the background.
Oh, man, the door is closed.
Oh, that's hilarious. Oh, my gosh. This show is going to be fun. I'm so glad we're recording this. No, don't worry. We're gonna keep having fun. Okay. It adds some texture to it.
Definitely.
Yeah, but you asked for motherhood, right? Or like,
oh, yeah, we're gonna talk about it. And that's why this is probably going to have to stay in the show. Well, anyway. Code, do you want to keep us on track or keep me on track? I'm doing horrible so far.
So, Jules, thank you for joining us today. This should definitely be a fun show after a few instances before we hit record. Let's let the audience know a little bit about Jules and you know, what you do day in and day out.
Like professionally or like at home or just like who I am as a person?
We'll start professionally. We'll hit home.
Okay, so I'm a fourth, where I finished 4 years, so I'm about to be a fifth year PhD student, which saying it kind of blows my mind still. But my day-to-day for work can be, it's a wide variety of tasks. So our call the other day, I was working on some trailer safety. So just like regular, you know, you register your car every year, so you have a boat and then you also have a trailer. And sometimes we're doing like tying fishing gear for ops, and that could be relative to my project, one of the many students in my lab's project, the broader stuff run by RPIs. I can be driving a boat. I'm usually not diving, unfortunately. Sad, Jules. but that's why I'm here. So I guess it's like, as a student, I'm usually on my computer more than anything. And then those other kind of tasks that I'm speaking on are my job as a research assistant for the lab.
And the lab's the Hawaii Institute for Marine Biology, right?
Yes. Well, within the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, which is kind of this sector within the larger University of Hawaii at Manoa, HIMB is located on Coconut Island or Mokuoloe. It's in the kind of the southern area of Kaneohe Bay, which is that big chunk taken out of the east side of Oahu. And there's I think more than 15 labs represented on that, you know, little couple mile square island. So cutting to the chase, the Shark Lab is one, and it's, you know, pretty established both in the state and in the university. It's about 25 years of research and pretty quality stuff. They like to hold a high standard, which is great. And then, you know, we did talk about like humanizing researchers a little bit. And I love that because sometimes when you hold a high standard, you're starting to lose your connection to like the community, to the day-to-day folks and connecting, you know, the conservation and the education to everybody. But we're working on it. We're growing. That's another thing. We've got funding. So we've got more students and we've got interns now that are paid, which is huge. It's totally cool. You know, if I was 18 and running around and found that opportunity, I'd be, you know, something I'd probably be doing.
I think that's incredible. It sounds like as research assistant where you are now, you have like a ton of hats that you wear, you know, from managing, you know, the registration and the safety of your trailers to multiple different things within the facility. Let's backtrack a little bit. Let's talk about your early career, you know, maybe 4 or 5 years ago before you entered your PhD run. What did that look like? And, you know, where was your focus then?
If we just go back 5 years, I was working as a dive guide in the ecotourism on a North Shore. You know, my science career started before that, so I'm like one of the older students in the lab.
Let's go there. Let's go before.
Yeah, let's go back a little further, because I moved here to Hawaii when I was 18 from California, and I
this is a totally normal thing to do. Totally normal.
I had a good friend who she introduced me to like the ocean and the coast. So I was from the valley. I grew up, and my family is not a huge ocean going. They're not anti, you know, but they're more land-based or lake-based. So I had, you know, introduction to boats and water sports and stuff like that. But I started to be introduced to just like going to the coast and go and like leisure time at the ocean. And that was just, I think if we want to start, that's like my draw. You know, I didn't grow up wanting to dive with sharks. I didn't grow up really, you know, immersed in it, but I've immersed myself as I continue to dive into these things that I enjoy and that I'm, you know, balanced with skill set and stuff like that. So anyway, we were supposed to move to Hawaii together, and she never did. And then my first year even, but I was like, well, I'm going anyway. And she's visited, you know, when we were younger, she was coming like every year, and we're still very close friends. It's really opened my world, because Hawaii is a very different place, and it continues to, you know, we're all evolving. But like when I moved here, I was like, oh, where are Hawaiian people? Or like, why am I in this lab? Now I'm starting to do biology and I'm starting to dive and stuff like that. And like, people don't know these fishes that they're studying. They've never seen them, right? Because that's part of a college. Like, you get out and like see something. And as I started being a scuba diver, I was like, oh, I'm learning about it and I'm seeing it. And that for me is like the best way to learn it, because you're applying that knowledge. And so I was a scuba diver. I became a dive instructor. I was working on boats already as I was leaving academia as an undergraduate in biology. And I was just like, I think I said, it's like, what is like school? No way. I'm going to scuba dive. Like, this is so crazy. I get paid to do it. I absolutely love it. But you know, if you like waterboard yourself, you know, you've got to keep going. Like, it's jumping into something so deep and you're just so immersed in it. You're like, oh my gosh. So it's evolved for me from scuba diving to, you know, snorkeling and free diving and whale watching and sailing. And then through these years of tourism and valuing the knowledge of people just on the water that are experiencing it and seeing changes or knowing, you know, the surface of the water and like triangulating like, oh, well, this dive site is here. It all looks like this expanse of blue, but like, if you look back at the land, like, I know where that is, or I can see which direction the current is going. I can read when the waves are coming in sets or not. Like, all of this to me was just like, I'm not learning this in a book, and I'm seeing it and it's being explained to me. And it's also been just pursuing this knowledge train. And then that's when I got into shark diving. And again, like, I didn't think I would be here because I didn't know this was a possibility. But now that I'm there, I'm taking like full advantage of that opportunity or those aspects of it and just jumping in and learning more and like craving more knowledge and experience. But like, say if I, I would prefer to be there, right? There's a point in my life where I was like experiencing sharks and interacting with animals almost more than people. Like I'm still socializing with everybody on the boat and like engaging them and teaching them about sharks. But I'm also paying attention to who's showing up, who do I recognize, how are they behaving? And that's what I'm trying to share with people that are coming out on the boat. And we talked about it too, was that growth of like Instagram, this shift in the general public's kind of perception of sharks, which has been totally crazy just in the last decade.
Let's take a moment and talk about that real quick. That kind of almost like paradigm shift, because I think some of the most followed accounts on TikTok and Instagram in this particular industry are shark based. So let's talk a little bit about that education and sharks and things like that on social media and how that's blown up and your views on it.
I think the blow up it's a double-edged sword because it's been such a strong and explosive kind of paradigm shift I think that's a great way to describe it. And it's hard to complain because it's drawn so much attention, and with attention comes that kind of like involvement or conservation or interest and like putting yourself in the water, wanting to see sharks, recognizing a bit away from the fear factor, which could be, you know, depth, it could be the water, it could be the teeth, it could be the story, the shadow. There's so many ways that you can create a dark picture, the unknown of the shark. And it's also a predator, which if you know, land-based predators as well, right, you're kind of like, oh my gosh. But the blow up is now baby shark. So to take that total predatory, your life is at stake, and now it's being taught to your baby as this like, a puppy.
Can we sing baby shark? Do you think we'll get in trouble for that? I don't know if we will.
I don't know. You can sing it.
That's Ethan singing it alone.
Baby shark, baby shark. Well, didn't we have Left Shark before we had Baby Shark? Wasn't that motherfucker just as popular?
Yeah. Well, but even those, like, because it's memes, it's Instagram, it's GIFs, like, it's, I pay attention more now. It has been a big streaming culture because you'll see certain movies or like kids' rooms or whatever. I like, you know, it's always been there, but I didn't really notice it before. But I'm like, oh yeah, like, people are totally fascinated by sharks, and it's totally cool experience to see one. And that's where we're, I think, circling back was like, it's a big fish. If you start to learn more about a shark and its physiology or ecology, like what it does, how it works, its day to day, that was something. If I want to pull positive from the When Sharks Attack 360, I was like, you know, I didn't want, I think there was original that was more like in its shark attack, but they are trying to paint a picture of why the shark attack. It's like, we don't really know, but we can kind of narrow it down. It's not very often. They weren't focused on some of these other negative aspects of it. Mm-hmm. And anyway, I'm on tangent again, so I'm going to cut myself off.
No, you know, actually, that was great. I was actually about to interject with another point, which I think which is really good for people to hear, is, you know, talking about why sharks attack and giving them kind of an understanding could be a good thing in most parts. Like you said, it's a double-edged sword. You're always going to have those dumbasses who are like, oh, I'm educated now, you know, because I saw something on Instagram. And, you know, they'll jump in the water when they're not supposed to and then get upset at the shark because the shark's like, what's in the water? I don't know what it is. And the only way they can fucking know is, oh, I can only figure it out with my teeth.
And it's amazing, though, how good sharks are. Like, I think we were talked about that at one point where I've seen people become really confident and feel really educated and feel really comfortable. And I am not out there like, I'm a shark diving expert, but you can check yourself and be like, everyone makes mistakes. You're out of your element, no matter how good of a swimmer you are. And you can always get out of the water. You are the one that got into the water, right? So like some of those kinds of concepts are like on the other edge of that sword of the media and the pushing, you know, let me tell you everything that I know that I've learned in the last 5 months of my life. Like, sharks are so cool. And it's just like, I'm like, oh, bless. You know, I love it. There's so much passion and there is conservation and educational draw, but like being here. So another kind of like passion project that I've jumped into that it's not in my PhD, but it's something I tried to meld and it's around is like people dove with sharks before in certain parts of the world. So communities that live coastal for many, many generations, right? So there's also this whole other story that's not being told and it's not in the narrative. And it's like, yeah, we catch sharks. Yeah, we fish sharks, but like we coexist with sharks and that's not new. It's not something that you discovered. And so if you really, you know, want to dive deep into that experience of humans and sharks, sorry, Cody.
Nice.
No, I was like, it's brought me back to people from like, say when I'm spending so much and I'm like, oh my gosh, like people are so crazy. I don't like, oh my gosh. I'm like hanging out with sharks. They don't talk back to me. They like do cool things. And now it's brought me back to these people that don't dive with sharks every day and still have like a very close relationship or a very close knowledge. And I find that fascinating as well. It's like, it's deep in the culture and it's something I was saying, I can't really talk on because it's not in my background. And it's a field that I study sensitively because I don't want to dive into like knowledge that's not mine. Mm-hmm. Or expose something that's not for me to expose, but it's like, it's very, very cool. And I find it super fascinating. And it's kind of bridging that area that Western science doesn't like where it's like qualitative, not quantitative. So it's mm-hmm. not a hard number. It's like people's words and their grandparents' words and their kupuna's words and stuff like that. But yeah, sharks in Hawaii and the Pacific is very cool.
Yeah, well, that explains, you know, your interest and also, you know, your mindfulness to things that might not necessarily be quantifiable, which is not something that you find very often in science. So that's kind of a cool, unique perspective. That obviously drove you to go to grad school. So let's talk about kind of that next chapter after, you know, getting your undergrad. And going into grad school, I know we had talked about before, you know, some advice that you wanted to give people. So let's maybe start there because I think that's a pretty good launching point when it comes to grad school.
Going to grad school was for me not an instant step after undergrad. It was something that as I kind of learned that, yes, I still like science. Like I like some of the jobs in the industry, but I jumped from leaving my undergrad into like the working industry, both to earn money and to earn experience and to kind of apply some of the things that I had learned. I knew like, oh, I'm going to have to take my GRE, which these days isn't necessarily a required aspect for grad school. Or I knew like, okay, I need a higher degree to stay in this field and to be a player in the industry and stuff like that. And so it was also though on my mind that I didn't quite know what it was or what it entailed, but I knew it would be like a big chunk of my life. And so I want to do something for me that's like, I need to be able to kind of jump into this. And it's hard for me to digest some of it. It'll take me a little longer, but I'll get there. And once I started doing sharks and experiencing, you know, so it's like, okay, I love diving. But you can do any fish, you can do any creature. Okay, I love sharks. And then finding that gap of like, whether it's shark behavior or just sharks in Hawaii or these species that I'm interacting. And then, okay, this is pretty much the only lab in the state. This is pretty much the only university that's doing like this level of study. How do I get there? And here's a funny one too. I think I started in ecotourism. I was driving, so I had gotten my captain's license already. And I wasn't a shark diver to start my trade there. I was driving the boat and my good friend was a diver. So it was great. We loved it. It was like going to work with your best friend every day. There had been, it was earlier in Instagram. It was earlier in, you know, delivering a message or being what, like, what even is a shark diver? And a tiger shark had washed up in Laniakea. So on the North Shore, which is like surfing, one of the surfing capitals of the world. So that right there, shark diving happens fairly close to shark surfing, which is now you're a public safety concern. Totally. Like, I respect that. And a shark washed up. And there's not a huge narrative on like what do you do and where did it come from? And so the gear is like a huge hook. It's a big metal chain. Like, you can do a whole podcast on fishing gear and like what you're fishing for, the size of the hook. Is it barbed? So people are starting to ask questions, and some people just run with a narrative from that and are just like, oh, like it must have been researchers. So there's also been in the state in the last, you know, even 5 years, this kind of like new, like researchers aren't stakeholders because they're just taking advantage of sharks. And so it's within, again, that popularity of like sharks need to be protected. Sharks are important. They're these big, beautiful animals. And it's good to be checked, right, as a researcher. And it's good to recognize, like, it's gone from killing sharks and anatomy and stomach contents to like sampling. But it's we're very much at a non-invasive methodology, which is a cool era to be studying in. And so my point here, again, sorry for the long-winded explanation, was when I saw, so my friend who I'm going to, yeah, my best friend that I'm going to work with, she was on site. So I was still driving up from town. She lived on the North Shore. She's taking pictures. And it's like, how can we figure, like, what's going on here? You know, we want to know more because I don't know who caught the, and I don't think it was a researcher. And it had a spaghetti tag. So it's this tiny little bit of wire. It's like this big, a little red wire sticking out. And it says Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. It says like number, you know, I used to remember it was something like 4009 or 6004. Like, and it's like, okay, who's a researcher in the state? Okay. Dr. Carl Meyer, Dr. Kim Holland. And I like, how do I contact them? And I had a message from Dr. Kim Holland. I still remember being like, oh my gosh, I got a message. Like, but just these are connections that led me to this place. And he's like, just right in that phone call, it's like, it's not research gear because it's like, and you're like, oh, duh, it's a chain. You know, it's a big hook. It's barbed. It's meant to catch and it's meant to kill or maim or just not even like, because what else do you catch with chain? If you're catching with fish, it's usually monofilament or a steel leader or something, you know. Some fish can bite the monofilament, like an Ono or something with teeth. So you want some steel, whatever. And so, and it's like, oh yeah, there's so much more, you know, the lab doesn't put out this huge narrative because they set this high standard and they're producing these quality papers and this shark research. But that's where I've been jumping in. Cause I feel like working in ecotourism, working in shark conservation, working in shark research, kind of like this podcast is like these things are kind of all floating around and they kind of overlap here and there, but how much stronger would it be to weave those together? Which is why I think you guys are doing a really cool show. And I was like, yeah, I want to be a part of, like, yeah, I'll be a thread. Hey Claire, this is a cool thing. You're like, what are you doing? It's cool.
Well, thank you, Claire, for referring. I know Claire is going to listen to this, and we're glad you're a thread too. Koji, you got any thoughts on kind of the impacts of, you know, ecotourism, like Jules was talking about, and, you know, the blow up of Instagram and more people becoming interested and things like that?
Oh yeah, I mean, definitely. You hit a lot of really good points on the points that you did hit. There were like a few instances here in the Everglades recently, because that's, I mean, Florida's huge. It's not necessarily my backyard, but it's definitely way easier for me to get to the Everglades than both of you. But
you got a lot of coastline over there.
There's a lot of ecology and things to study in Florida. It's literally still a swamp. And I think what's interesting about ecotourism and like the rise and fall and circle of life when it comes to ecotourism is that it directly correlates with the type of technology that's currently out. So like 10, 15, maybe 20 years ago, print newspaper, radio, early television. This is how we're getting information on scientific facts, on propaganda. She did. Those are finger guns audibly for those listening. I think, you know, in that era, it was just as easy to spread misinformation about, you know, ecotourism and propaganda in that sense. But now, with everything at our fingertips, in a matter of 3 seconds, you can get a piece of false information and instantly have your view swayed on a certain species, on a certain, you know, conservation, whatever the case is.
And then you can share it on your live story before anyone else has.
Yeah, exactly. And then you become the expert because you have this entitled opinion in this, you know, so we could rabbit hole into that very deeply. But I think, you know, where we are this day and age in 2023, it's so much easier to spread misinformation. And it's also much easier to fact check it and correct it in the right channels. So I definitely agree. It's a double-edged sword. That's my thought, and I'm sticking to it.
It's a good one. And I think that's where the rise of social media platforms that encourage community notes, I think that's, you know, really something that's going to help kind of curb the sharper end of the double-edged sword, you know, the more painful side. I think the more people that get to fact check those kind of things and opinions aren't swayed so easily, I think will also help impact a lot of what researchers are experiencing and encourage more citizen science in a positive way. And I'm not speaking to dumbass citizen science. I'm speaking to like people who actually care to communicate and collaborate.
Well, I mean, is this kind of a citizen science situation though, too, right? Because you're melding the language, you're melding the experience. And even, I guess what I'm trying to say here is like among researchers, even like you're creating this space for me to see like, oh, okay, it's easy to look up like the big dogs. It's easy to look up established researchers. It's easier to find the fact check, the information that's like, okay, we know this about sharks. But we're also with social media and with just the day to day, we're learning so much. And some things sound great and then you learn more about it, or you think that it's going to go this way. And then, I don't know, I just jumped in there with some stuff.
That's her thought. She's sticking to it.
I'm sticking to it. I was like, started talking about the show again, but then I'm like, wait, this is kind of like, anyway, yeah.
Oh, this is a fun one.
Not the bullshit citizen science. The real stuff.
Before we get too far into this week's episode, I wanted to give a quick shout out to our sponsor. Our sponsor this week is you, our listeners. How? Well, now that we're a nonprofit, the donations that we receive go directly towards funding our shows. Want to help or need more information? Visit wildscapeproduction.com/donate to support the show. We're so thankful for the support. You make the show exactly what it is. So there's like, you know, there's two ways, there's many ways of looking at it. But, you know, to kind of backtrack on what you said earlier, like all these things floating around and you, Jules, as, you know, being the position that you are now, finding a way to connect all of those is essentially exactly what we're doing. And I think the best word for that, which I've used like 50 times today, is catalyst. Like we are catalysts to just connect other people and bring education and awareness and advocacy all to the forefront and, you know, not skew information, because I'm not an expert in anything. I'm good at a lot of like really good things, but I'm not like great at one thing, you know, but I don't want to pride myself in being good at one thing because I think it's a lot more impactful to be able to share multiple aspects.
We're past the boomer.
Yeah, right. I'm not going to retire doing one thing, you know, and I think that for those listening, you know,
and it's, you can't these days very well do that.
These days you can't unless you, I'm not going to go there, but I was going to go to
some
a dark,
of them really
gonna,
do try.
I was gonna go to a dark place and then throw some finger guns at the end, but I'll leave that to you, Jules.
The dark place and the finger guns.
Both. Come on now, stay on track, guys. It's shark ecotourism.
She's our showrunner now. She's the show guy.
I was like, wait, you're talking about Florida? There's lots of sharks in Florida. I'm
yeah,
like,
we're
okay,
fine.
Wait,
so, okay, so here's one thing. So there was a man fishing on a charter in Everglades recently, and someone was filming it because someone's always filming something with
it's cameras scary.
In their
yeah, pocket. That's
scary. You got to be careful, Ethan. So there's
you guys
like
are filming
this guy,
me right now.
Yeah. There's this guy filming, or there's this guy filming, and they catch a snook, and he goes to release
fish.
The snook. Yeah, it's a
sounds like a Dr. Seuss character, but
yeah,
yes.
I know, right? They're beautiful fish. They're one of my favorite fish to catch. But anyways, he releases this snook and successful release, fish swims off, and then, you know, you hear the guys on the boat, they're like, "Oh yeah, no, you should be fine. Just a couple of seconds should be good." And he's talking about rinsing the snook slime off his hands. So he takes his hands in and literally for not even 2 seconds, he just, you know, in the water, and then a bull shark pulls him in by the hand.
Oh, like, oh, this is a viral video, kind of, right?
Yeah, right.
I saw this.
The thing is, like, everyone on that boat knows about sharks in the Everglades. You know your risk. You know the waters you're in. You know that it could be at any moment, especially if you're in the water. But for 2 seconds, that shark was under the boat.
It's fast.
That shark heard an outboard motor. He heard a fish in distress, couldn't catch the fish. Next thing you know, he's waiting for the next meal to flop over.
Well,
and it happened to be that
actually,
guy's hands.
Yeah, if he was really right there, because this is, we're painting the best that we know, right? And we had a video, so it's better than a story, right? Because you saw with your own eyes in the video. And then I was kind of like, oh yeah, maybe, like, oh yeah, the shark's under the boat. But when you just said that too, something clicked, like, if the shark was right there, he pulls it out, and the shark's right there. He's waiting. Like you say, he lets the fish go and the shark missed the fish. I mean, he could have already been like coasting. Yeah, he really could have been right there, right under the boat. I mean, how else? Because if they're that informed and they're looking, you know, they're seeing shadows and he's right. Could he have just scooped a bucket of water and washed his hands? Sure. But it's an accident too. So it's an accident on the side of the shark. It's an accident on the side of the human. It's like sometimes you cannot prevent every accident. So, like, I'm going back to Sharks 360 again, but it's like, I think it's important for shark attacks, and some of them, you know, with social media, gruesome things can wind up on the internet. But if you are choosing to put yourself, like you said, he knows or whomever knows, it's like you really have to take that respect and responsibility upon yourself. And even if the accident happens, it's like, was it the shark's fault? What happened? We don't know. But this all, it's like now carrying this knowledge and moving it forward and taking it with you and then doing better next time if you can, or I don't know.
Right.
It's,
no,
you don't
I,
know.
I know. I see
we don't know
going.
The exact circumstances.
You don't. And like, even after the fact, like this, the report after the fact is like, we don't know what these men did afterwards. Like, how did they advocate for safety upon fishing in the Everglades? You know, like, oh, hey, I was that guy in the video. Next time, scoop a bucket up or use the live well, or, you know, maybe not rinse your hands off when there's shark infested waters. And like, shark infested waters, that term I think should be completely deleted from the Webster's dictionary, because there's sharks everywhere, especially in Florida. But
I heard a funny joke one time that I forgot where I heard it, but essentially there was a tourist on a boat. And they asked the captain, you know, how do you know that there's sharks in the waters? You know, like what's the gauge? Like, is there certain spots? And this fucking captain said, you go taste the water. Is it salty? Then there's sharks in it.
Ethan, get out of here. I got one for you.
Okay, let's see.
What is a pirate's favorite letter?
R.
P? Oh.
But 'tis the sea he loves.
Oh, God.
The salty one is a good one. I've heard that a lot. A lot of people. I worked in tourism. It's like.
So I think that really bad mom joke is a good transitioning point to talk about you not only being in the conservation and research industry, but also a mom. That's not something we encounter very often, is someone who can balance both. So let's talk about that a little bit. How has it been, you know, becoming a mom all while doing all this at the same time?
A balancing act. Magic. It's, you know what, we're, a lot of people are parents and a lot of people are professionals. And I think a lot of people do it. Not everybody, like, you know, choose your path if you want to or not, which should be up to the individuals, but that's political. I'm not the first one to do it. You know, I think my gauge has been like my sister probably, or my parents. So my parents were both working full time when I was growing up. My sister's like went through med school and had two kids. So I'm like, oh, that's the gauge of like,
oh, holy shit. That's an expectation right there.
But it's also, I mean, people are having kids and struggling with things at the same time as well. So there's never going to be like a perfect way to do it. I guess that's my point really. It's like, it's never going to be the perfect time necessarily, unless you're really good at planning, which I'm kind of more organic and, things are changing and I'm trying to always go with the flow. But so, yeah, I didn't plan out motherhood and grad school as being this like awesome thing. But I had thought about it, you know, and it ended up aligning that way for me. And I think, like say I didn't go to grad school right away after undergrad for different reasons. And it's worked into my life now, because I'm doing something that I really enjoy doing, learning about sharks. And it keeps me, that balancing act keeps me kind of like focused, because I'm not, you know, I'm already married and I already have kids. And they keep me very busy, all of these things. So I'm not worried about, you know, I know kind of, I'm more comfortable with like who I am as a person by now. I've done, you know, shadow work of different kinds. I've had experience in and out of like industry, like, you know, job working and scholarly job working is a little bit of a different realm. And I like it. It keeps me, you know, I'm not running around trying to find, like, I have friends here, I have family here. And, for me, that's just how my path has gone. And I think that, it's very hard sometimes, especially because I had a second one. So my first daughter was born about 6 months right before I started, which again, I had applied to grad school pretty confidently a year before. And, you know, some little bit of paperwork and some timeline or here and there didn't line up. And I made sure I really got it right the second time. But now she's four and my second daughter is going to be one here in a couple months. And going from one to two, like, you know, it's going to be more work, but it's just that much more. And I guess my point is she's turning one and I finally feel like I'm kind of getting back on my horse again. So my husband does, we both work part-time and his mom helps a lot, or members of his family that are local that, you know, my family's not, they're in town sometimes to help. But it's just a balancing, it's give and take, you know, sometimes you're like, oh, are my ambitions too high? It's like, okay, well, I'm still doing quite a bit of cool stuff. Does that mean I can do every cool thing that I want to do? No, we get one life. We're making choices. You make sacrifices. So I'm pretty happy with where I am. Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not like, oh darn, I had kids. Like, I'm 32 and I'm like, okay, you know, there's 18-year-olds that are just learning how to dive with sharks or learn about sharks. And like, it's not on my shoulders, all of these things that I'm battling and want to take on, right? Younger generations are already here. Like, and that's cool. That's another cool thing about like social media and technology and engagement, right? Is like, and just with the climate of like global warming, climate change, you know, if you're a scientist, these things are all hovering up here, right? That's where funding is too, if you want to be conscious. Or that's where it's like, what are these solutions? And I'm kind of delving again, but it's like a lot of the solutions we have also floating around and they're accessible, but it's like, where's the money? Where's the power? And so that's where you get back into conservation and education, is like, people need to care And again, with all of this change that we're living in, and like, I'm as a growing scientist, like we're seeing the change and people do care. And so it is very, you know, it's sucky that things are kind of up and there's questionable changes going on, but the fact that people are motivated to do something about it and not just like self-involved, and I'll just stop there.
we like watching you go. You can absolutely go for it.
I draw you in and then I paint this picture and then I just drop it.
We'll talk about some of the mom stuff real quick before we delve into kind of the other end of that. I think that's one that's amazing, you know, dealing with the balancing act. A lot of what, you know, we tend to see externally with people both in conservation and especially in kind of that PhD lifestyle is that there's so much time that's spent and committed to that, that you don't ever really hear about families or having families or children or anything like that. And I think there's almost an external stigma about, like, if you choose this life, you're on a boat, you know, 24/7, and you don't have a partner that you do life with, or if you do, they're probably on the same boat with you. You know, just to make it work.
You mean computer. I feel like these days it's like, we're past this era of like being in field science, which is my preferential area. As like, it's like we know how to get the data. We know like what kind of data speaks. And now it's like, what can you do? It's like the analyses and these statistical testing that you can
do. How can you implement that data?
It's funny. I feel like a lot of people have this concept of like researchers when we're talking about like this pedestal, and they're like, oh, they're just about it for the paper. I left ecotourism for some of these things that I'm now seeing in academia at large, like institutionalized academia is still funding. There's still politics. There's still social balancing because you have other labs and within a lab or just other big hubs, other big shark research hubs. And then and then connecting that to like the public or doing outreach and stuff. It does command a lot of time. And like everything you do, you're choosing what can you do, what opportunities arise, and you know, building your repertoire or whatever. Like, say, I think something my husband's really helped me to do is slow down. And I think, just remembering with kids as well, right, is you just are like with kids, time flies and you can't ignore it. It's like they can't speak and now they're walking and now they have, you know, they can put on their own clothes or they can feed themselves or there's all this happening right in front of you. And so, like I was saying, my parents worked full time when I was growing up and I'm like, I don't want to work full time. And then, wrapping that in, I had a conversation with someone on the boat because we take a shuttle boat to get to work. It's like on the little island off the island. And I said something like, oh, I'm kind of in the background. And she's kind of like, what do you mean there's a background and a foreground? And it's like, I'm not full time, you know, and I even in the summer when people generally like you don't have classes maybe or something, I'm half time. And it does still, though, consume me. And it does, you know, some days you just want to stay home with your kids and some days you just are like trying to get something done for work. It's to humanize, like we're all doing that in some way, shape or form, whether it's like mm-hmm. your health or your family or your professional life or, opportunities and skill set and what makes you happy and succeed in life and being a better person. Words.
Yeah, and that's not something we get to talk about a lot in shows like this. You know, there's not a lot of time where you get to strip away the science, you get to strip away the animals or the organizations and talk about just being a human, you know, of, you know, like me. I haven't said this. I don't think I've really said this out loud. And I especially haven't said this on the show. So I think I might shock Koji that I'm actually going to say this. But you kind of hit on, you know, medical. You know, I had a heart attack, here recently, at 29. So being able to balance, you know, coming back from a heart attack that, you know, you never thought you'd have, or, sure, you know, a medical incident that you never thought you'd have, and being able to balance that with work, is something that no one ever talks about, you know, balancing life, because shit fucking happens, you know, yeah, and it gives you no warning. So, you know, to tie it in, you know, with you and how, you know, you want to spend time with your kids, you want to enjoy that and find that balance, I think is incredible and doesn't get talked about enough, which I thought was a really cool opportunity when we talked about recording this episode of the show, was to be able to say, you know, shark shit is awesome. It is so cool. But to me, the interesting part is that there was an extra layer that we got to kind of peel back and really talk about, you know, the humanization of you as an individual, and be like, you know what, I'm a fucking badass mom who not only can I raise two kids, I can live my life, I can be a PhD student.
I don't do it alone, but yeah.
Shout out to the partners out there.
And just the, you know, there's more too. There's family, and there, like, I, my lab even, or like, I'll bring my kids to work when I, not like all the time, because it's like, what are you going to do when you're watching your kids? But it's kind of cool to even like expose lab mates to kids, or show, like, if we have a captive shark for some reason, it's cool to see that, right? You can't just go walk and see a shark the same way that you can see like a dog, or in some places it's a squirrel, in some place, like, whatever. And so, a nene goose, but like, exposing, when we were talking about social media and stuff too, it's like the exposure, the experience, back to just a shark itself, and like being a fish and the way that they move and the way that they approach, or like the guy washing his hands, does he really know? Does he have experience with sharks? He doesn't even, like, yeah, 2 seconds seems totally fine. Was he even looking around? Like, I don't know. You just, mm-hmm, for me, like, sharks have been something I just have started, I've really jumped in to studying, and I really enjoy studying them. And the PhD process is very different than what I thought, because it's not just studying sharks, which is the part that I love, which is, you know, you can do it in the water, you can do it with data and all these other things, but I don't know. I don't know where I'll be in, you know, 5 years. I should be graduated by then, but I don't know.
We'll check back in 5 years.
Yeah. Hopefully by the end of 25, I'm at least kind of like that. That was my goal, I think, when I switched from a master's track to a PhD track, but hopefully I'm at least like see the more of the light at the end of the tunnel. In 5 years though, is like, I don't know that I'll be in academia, I guess, is where I left off.
You know what? First of all, kudos, Jules, for just being badass, and also, you know, being where you are now while juggling being a mom and a wife and all of the things in life. I mean, it's so important for us on the show to be able to really dive into, you know, the human aspect of who our guests are, because this is something different that, you know, our audience, I hope our audience sees, is there's a trend. You know, it's not, you know, our story. Like, yes, we can tell our story, Ethan, you and I can definitely, you know, put that out there in the world, but more so giving you the microphone to, you know, just ramble on, if you will, and
point your finger guns
and finger guns and mom jokes. And
I'm switching to the lightsaber now.
for the audience listening to this, before we started recording, I showed Jules a lightsaber, and now it went from finger guns to lightsabers.
Well, they can't. Oh yeah, I guess you can see. I was like, this is a podcast, they can't see what we're doing. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess they'll see little
on YouTube. You can.
There you go.
Mickey Mouse, don't get mad at me. So now we have warm orange lighting, and now we have blue cool lighting.
Now we're going to start like fighting with the, oh, okay. Oops.
So thank you for sharing a little bit of your life, and where you are. I think there's a lot of inspiration there for the youth and maybe future moms out there. But I think, you know, our favorite segue into all of our shows is to really pull out and extract those wild stories, whether it was a research mission, whether it was a field mission, whatever instance in your career, early on, recently, shit, it could have been 2 days ago for that matter. what are some wild stories that you think the audience needs to hear? And there is no filter applied to this. This,
I'm like, how much do I want to share? And where do I, why did I think this?
Share it all.
She's regretting being on the show now.
I'm like, oh, well, when you're like, oh, the like, what do you want to tell? Like, the people need to hear. And I'm like, do they need to hear this? I mean, I guess. It was while I was working in the eco tours. And yeah, it involved me and a whale. I think it was just probably like my best wild and unprotected story. And so there had been this, you're not going to believe this, but it was, I was like shark diver mode. Like I'm a little jaded now about it, but I was like pretty in the thick of it. It was never on my Instagram bio, I will say, but that's all right. And on Christmas is, I think, 2017. And it was on Christmas, and not day, but like right before sunset, a whale carcass, which if you're shark diving or like interested in sharks, to sharks, a whale carcass is like a candy Metropolis buffet. I mean, it's free nutrition. It's not going to fight back. It's a little moldy, but they're living on every calorie, right? And this whale carcass is coming into Haleiwa Harbor, like at the channel. And I don't know how, I mean, the miracle of how this drifted in so close to shore without it being spotted, or, you know, maybe there had been fishers go pretty far off, much farther than divers. Maybe it had been seen at some point, but it, you know, when you're on North Shore Oahu, shite's going to blow over to Kauai if it's offshore far enough. And I got this call in the towards the evening, like, oh, whale carcass. Like, oh, okay, where? You know, there had been a whale carcass before. People are like trying to go dive out in like green water. You're like, why would you do that? No, that's, you can be passionate and stoked, but that's completely unsafe on so many levels. Okay. This is in shallow water and someone needs to tow it out. So for public safety, and there, and I've now since then been introduced to very different ideas of how to manage, for example, a whale carcass. But this is not like a dying stranding situation. This is like getting to the site. This is, it's like stripped of skin. It's almost, you know, undistinguishable. It's at this point, it's like a large marshmallow. And it looked to me, you know, I'm not a whale. I'm not a cetacean expert. I'm not a whale biologist, but it looked like a humpback, both because of like the time of year and the likelihood and the shape of the mouth. So there was just this big jawbone hanging out and then this big marshmallow carcass. And it's like coming into Haleiwa Harbor, which is like surfing and swimming and wading and kayaking and supping and all this stuff. And usually if it's manageable, it kind of is this weird jurisdiction of like, oh, is it a lifeguard person that's going to take it out? Are we going to involve like at some point the Coast Guard or NOAA or DLNR? And so where I worked at the time, which is a pretty ballsy, pushing the limits kind of place, is like, we're just going to tow it. We're just going to get out there. We're going to push public safety and we're going to get it off the beach. So it was like, yeah, I'm there. I'm the first one there. If I, you know, besides someone who had never left. And so we're launching the first boat. I mean, I lived close, but I was all, it was like Christmas Day. You're kidding me. And so we get there and there's a first boat. There's a second boat launching. You know, I have my best friend still, right, from the situation. She was like ill. She was like, I'm throwing up or whatever. Like, I need to be there. Like, we're like, this is what we live for. And so there's, I think I made it out actually on the second boat originally. And then for undisclosed reasons that I don't recommend, I ended up swimming mid-tow from one boat to the other boat for like communication or something. And it was like one of these moments I'll never like be able to share properly, but it's like a boat towing a dead whale with this like marching army of sandbar and Galapagos sharks. Like no one's predating upon it. And we're still pretty close to shore, but it's just sharks. Like, and they're just there for it too, right? They're like, this is for us. this is so crazy. And I'm like on the other boat, like that was pretty unsafe and dumb. Like, what? Okay, but it was the coolest thing ever. Don't worry, I'm getting there. And so it gets towed out initially to like the dive site area, which is within this kind of like outside of state waters borderline area, so a couple miles offshore. And there was already calls and things like, say, pushing the limits and kind of asking for forgiveness. And then somehow someone got a NOAA permit. So it was like, oh, okay. Because like, say, it's this jurisdictional area, it's this gray zone. Like, what do we do? Okay, well, public safety, we got to get it out of here. And I've now, like, say, I've been introduced now to people that if it's like a near stranding, if it's like a whale that is beaching itself, that may actually be part of this kind of larger process of life, right? That you're now, anyways,
we interfering with. That.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, there's definitely different beliefs here. But so this one's already gone, and it's kind of sitting among the moorings overnight because, like, say, the sun's already, like, the sun's going down. I do my swim with, like, sunlight. Now the sun's down, and it's kind of around the Ecotour range. They're going to, like, keep towing it out first thing in the morning. And the morning comes, and there was tiger sharks in the morning. I think we slept on the boat. I was with a group of, like, three people that stayed out, tied to a stationary like mooring to then continue the tow in the morning. And at dawn, at daybreak, which not everyone agrees that tiger sharks are crepuscular, which are like feeding or active at dawn and dusk. In this situation, they're feeding on only one part of this carcass, and they were fighting each other for the tongue. It was cool. It was really interesting to me because it was like, say we had seen other shark or I had seen other sharks in the water and none of them were feeding. And it seems like, oh, this is huge marshmallow of like nutrients, but you're like, it's decaying and like certain parts are maybe more nutritious or whichever. And then during the day, as the tow, like as the other people and then NOAA came to check it out as well, cause they had like done the permit. And so before NOAA got there, I was like, this is tiger shark candy. Tiger sharks are my BFFs. Like, I want to kind of like experience what they experience. And I like to share candy with my BFFs. So I'm like in there with this cotton candy tongue. It's like very squishy. And like, you know, I've got a wetsuit on, but I probably smelled awful.
Define in there for us. What is
like
in
rolling
there?
On the tongue? Like I have like a hand knife, like a, not a Vicky, but some like dive knife or something. And I'm like, you know, there weren't, I wasn't doing this while there was tiger sharks actively feeding. They had been like, say in that small encounter or experience of like, say, I'm trying to learn everything I can because this doesn't happen very often. And like, say, it's extremely interesting to me. And so I'm paying attention is like, oh, they were feeding at dawn. And now there had been tiger sharks around. And there had been smaller sharks stayed way low. Like if you could ever see them at all, Hawaii has generally beautiful blue water and they're deep, deep down. And there was tigers around. And then even then, like if I'm getting into behavior and ecology, like you're like, why aren't these even like totally munching down? And there had been a little bit of diving going on before it got fully towed out. And later there's been more publicized carcasses because now everyone wants to see it and be a part of it, which is a whole nother. I was like 7 months pregnant. And when I first heard about a very public carcass, I thought I was like, oh no, I'm missing this experience. And then it was like, oh my gosh, I had that experience more intimately and without such unsafe. Like if I'm going to be unsafe, that's on me, but I don't want to put other people in that situation. I don't want to tell other people like, oh, it's a good idea. Go do it. And so it's like, that's where you're like, oh, should I share this story? I'm like, I guess, because that's just like kind of who I am and something, you know, there's other things going on in my mind. I didn't video it. I probably didn't even think about it. There had been video going for the permit and stuff like that. But anyway, yeah, we like had some of the whale tongue. And then I'm also like, I had kept like a barnacle from like one of the few small pieces of skin to like, oh, that would be cool to identify this whale. Like, I think for in conservation and education as well, it seems so easy because we have these tools and technology, but it's still very hard. And it takes scientists and researchers who are going to put in the time, like you said, and be busy all the time to figure out like, what equipment do I need to figure out even like what kind of whale this is? Or like, am I going to use genetics or am I going to like, I don't know. I tried to make it like less crazy. It seems just like a random story of like some stupid shit I did when I was younger.
I mean, it seems like you had you played a tiger shark cotton candy.
Yeah. I straight up cut it out and was like, wanted, you know, you're like, oh, not like I have to feed sharks or anything, but even then you just learn so much about like they're big fish. It's amazing. And they're so powerful and large and capable. And I've seen so many people do so many things. And I have to wonder, you know, if that was like a wolf or a bear, how well or not so well some of those scenario would go. Just being that they're a predator, you know. And that goes back to shark attacks. Like, they're totally capable and it is so rare. So it's like, yeah, okay, well, what did happen? What was the scenario, the environment they're in, or what are they being pressed to do here to survive or whatever?
I think there's a good lesson to pull from this story too, is, you know, we all do dumb shit when we're younger, but, you know, as we grow older, as long as we're not, you know, deceased from that dumb shit, which you might have been playing in that pocket of the pool.
I mean, I love doing it. If that was like something that I would do, like, I would totally do that if that was like being asked of me. But it's not really, yeah, it's less of a responsible thing at this point. And then with cameras and everywhere, it can easily be, you know, like, why or what do you need that for? It's like, I'm just trying to learn. I'm just trying to learn more. You know, I want to understand what, like, the fat content of the tongue and that, oh, okay, like, are you looking for stable isotope analyses? Are you trying to find if the tiger shark, their physical tissue, is it made up of whale? Like, we can do things like that now. We can trace a carbon and nitrogen in their muscle tissue and then like go backwards or and see like you know how much of their
tissue. Or you could find decay rate of the whale and know how much time that you have from when a whale dies to when, you know, it's possibly completely decayed. Now, obviously, you know,
it's going to sink. It's going to sink. You're that balance also, which bringing up kind of the differences of the way people deal with dead fish, or in this case, dead whale and tissue, is like, that's important nutrients for the water column as well. So not only, I mean, if you get into whaling, just talk about whaling right there, you're like, oh, look at all this extraction of nutrients. Look at fishing. Look at all this. And then we have all this fish carcass and waste product. And where does it go? And what are the, you know, our concept of trash and plastic production is linear when it should be circular. And
reduce, reuse, recycle.
Conservation.
Hashtag. That's a Jack Johnson song for anyone that doesn't know. It wasn't just randomly singing.
Well, I mean, now you've definitely had, you know, that story to tell, like Ethan said, you know, you look back in hindsight and it's something that you can go back on and learn from. You know, there's a lesson out of that, whether you have a lesson or we take a lesson from it. I think, you know, at the end of the day, like, I personally won't jump into a whale carcass, but if I was asked to, I would. So I'm right there with you, Jules.
There was no sharks in the present at the time. There was no feeding sharks present at the time. Yeah. Disclosure.
I think this is the one time I could ever say in my entire life I would go throat deep.
Let's dive in there. You don't want to be on some of the text message threads I have with like my, yeah, we, that's
I kind
of like,
do. Can you add me?
You're gonna be like, WTF, are they sane? You're like, is this okay?
You're like, that's the best part.
Well, so you know what, to bring it round circle too, is like, if you want to see sharks, you probably are in some sense directly or indirectly involved with food, because they generally don't want to see people. right? I mean, like, if you think of every person that gets in and out of the water, then you add, like, okay, not just swimming along shore. Maybe you go a little further out, you're diving, you got a wetsuit, you stay longer. Now you're like jumping in off a boat platform. So you go a little further, you stay in longer. You're actually fishing in the open ocean. You're still dealing with prey items of sharks. Like, we don't see them that often. We're also, like, if you just look at biomass and abundance, like the main Hawaiian Islands, our predatory count is quite low compared to like the Northwestern and uninhabited islands. And that's just public safety. That's humans in our territory. And then it's like, okay, so now you're shark diving and shark ecotourism. It's like, that's where, you know, when you get into predators, you can't just see like a bear on a mountain with your telescope. It's like, you cannot see a shark rarely even on the surface because they don't porpoise. They don't breathe. And then even these ones that we're interacting with, like the big three, right? Whites and bulls and tigers that are the negative interactions with people, like and oceanic white tips, they have mammals in their diet based off of like old research of stomach contents and stuff like that. They're in our same range of like what humans can even reach, despite like, you know, submarines and you're totally protected and getting into like the 500 species of sharks that go deeper and deeper and farther offshore. So you're using food usually.
And mating grounds too, right?
Well, you're aggregations of some kind, right? Because if you want to provide like a tour and you're guaranteeing things like dolphins and whales, like say you can see them. So sharks, yeah, you're probably using food. You're probably using, what is it, a social aggregation, mating aggregation, nursery habitat.
Catch me at the mating one.
Throat deep.
Mating for sharks is like not. See, I mean, maybe if it gets kind of gnarly, yeah, they get like.
I've seen some footage of it.
Yeah, and yeah. It's like, I don't know if it's consensual.
It's the kinkiest
like
type thing you could ever see.
It's like, oh, shark porn. You're watching shark porn over there.
It's on Disney Plus.
Which is interesting, though, even thinking about cameras and like things that we watch and learn and are so fascinated about other animals. Yeah, totally. It's very crazy.
Oh, no, we went off the rails.
That's okay. That's what this show's for.
I think we'll
keep it in.
Oh, no.
So sorry again. So sorry.
Yeah, that was.
This is what we needed.
That was me on that one. This is where the fun begins.
Yeah, tiger sharks like to eat whales, so I learn about whales too. Tiger shark ecotourism, feeding sharks. Do you need to feed sharks? No. Is it good to feed wildlife? No. Do I enjoy doing it at the right time and place for a reason? Yes, totally.
You just did an entire questionnaire.
That's her story. She's sticking to it.
I'm sticking to it.
Pew, pew, pew. Pretty sure we found the name of the episode, and I think it should be Into the Thick of It, and just keep it there nice and broad.
I was gonna say Throat Deep.
Oh god.
I mean that too, but I think that could be like an uncovered rock that someone stumbles into when they're listening to it. That shouldn't be our lead in.
Maybe they thought they were getting into something else, and then they found our episode and actually learned quite a lot of other stuff.
That's right.
But I don't know. It's
that's kind the of, point of the show.
That's not really necessarily the audience that I'm targeting.
Types in Throat Deep into Google, and our podcast pops up.
So what does pop up? Yeah, what? What is out there?
Oh, I promise you it's not about sharks.
Sharks, they don't chew. They just bite, tear.
Oh gosh. In my head, I just finished your sentence. You're like, sharks don't chew. And the first thing that popped up into my head was, they swallow.
It's true, though. It's true.
We're just stating scientific fact.
Yeah, yeah. We're learning more about sharks. That's the whole reason I jumped on this thing. I just want to, like, subtly soak everyone's brains with all these, like, weird tidbits. And then you can go on your own and be like, wait, what did she say?
We have so much highlight reel material.
You could have just a blooper. We'll just have a blooper episode. It'll be comedic relief.
Like 30-40% of this episode is a blooper.
I love it.
Maui Mystery Shark had a really fun blooper as well. I wish I could share with you guys too.
We can do that off the call. But for those people who are still listening, who have made it through this shit show, Maui.
That was the other episode.
Maui Shark Mystery is on Disney Plus, and Jules is actually featured in it. And I won't spoil it, but there is such a badass moment at the very end of the show that centers around Jules. There was a rough go there towards the end of the episode, where the primary kind of star of the show, Paige, had gone through a little bit of an incident with the tiger shark, and it looked fairly painful, but there was no bite. So, you know, not to delve too deep into it. And it required, Jules to kind of come in and save the day. And it was a really badass moment. And I encourage anyone listening to the show, to hop on Disney Plus and watch that, because that was probably one of the better shark documentaries that I've seen. And shout out to you, Jules, for really coming through on that show. That was fucking yes. Badass.
I was like, oh, just while it's eating, it's distracted. They're super shy out here. They're totally wild. They're not with divers. I was like, maybe we can take, that's our only opportunity we have. So maybe we can just give it a shot.
So Jules, it's been a jam-packed episode. For those that have stuck around this far and have gained...
Throatful.
Very.
<No. laughs> Whoa, he licked the microphone, ladies and gentlemen.
That's his mic and his mic alone.
COVID's not a thing anymore.
I don't share microphones.
Okay, I talked for way too long. My kids are getting crazy. And Koji's wrapping up the show, y'all.
To wrap it up, how can one get involved in and help ecotourism research in a broad way?
I want to say, like, educate your, you know, learn more about it. I know that it's hard because if you Google things, there's some information that's much more tangible and accessible, right? Like videos. And we think science is catching up. It's just that science is a little more reserved about like what goes out there. And science produces in general, like publications. But even if you go on Google Scholar, like, I think that's for where ecotourism is now, especially like up here in Oahu. There's so much information and it takes a little bit more time to dig out the good stuff. So when I'm saying like, oh yeah, just go educate yourself or whatever. But like, if it's interesting to you, learn more, you know, I inspire you to learn more about it in ways that are in, you know, that you can. Come on. And to question things, like question what you're learning about and question what you think you know. Because even researchers, like we have specialties, we know, you know, certain things about different areas, and it doesn't necessarily, you know, say that what you saw is wrong if you saw otherwise or, you know, but just keep learning and keep questioning and we can all get there together. Like we're all learning about sharks still. We're learning so much all the time. So I'd keep an open mind and, you know, start with one species, start with if it's diving that you're interested, if it's, you know, shark finning that inspires you to do more, you know, where are these things happening? What communities, what levels of the community is this happening? If you look at like diving videos and stuff, there's very few, you can quickly start to hone in on like, oh, where are these viral videos coming from? Where are these big labs at? Who is consuming the shark fin? That's the problem. And then you can just take it to like legislation, legislation. And it's like, okay, well, what's within the law or without? And there's so many ways to be involved. There's so many things that you can, I think like every dive, you can find something fascinating, whether it's just the sun dancing on the surface or a little jellyfish going by, like nobody knows everything. So we do need everybody to keep engaging. And that's what I think is cool about this platform I was saying before. And you know, to even just engage like me with the community or with like watching the episodes and being like, oh, I didn't even like, I don't know this guy because I don't know all shark ecologists or like what they're doing with technology or some of the same technology that I'm using. And it's just all about, you know, open mind, keep learning, keep questioning. And everyone's a scientist. Everyone's a scientist.
Yeah. Well, you hit on something cool about contacting you. How can people do that? If they do have, you know, questions that you're open and willing to answer, or they do have, you know, potential citizen science, any research that they've done or stories that they want to pass along to you, how do they do that?
Probably easiest is on my email, which is like, I think I check my university one the most often because other I put like subscriptions and things to other emails sometimes, or social media. I don't pump my social media really, so that's not the great, like I kind of stay covert. I have an account, but I'm not like, so probably it's hard. I don't know if I should spell it out. It's kind of hard. We'll put a little thingy, but
yeah,
it's my last name, Hartl, Hartl, and then just Jul at hawaii.edu. That's my email and I'm sticking to it.
Well, Jules, it has been a great show. Wow, we have a lot to dive through.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. Thank you for your time today. And we hope to meet you in person in the future and continue this conversation.
All right. Well, thanks again, Jules. That was a great episode. That was a fun one for sure.
I like to have fun. You can be a scientist and have fun.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Wild and Unprotected Podcast, brought to you by Wildscape Productions. Follow us on social media at Wildscape Productions. For more information on our documentary series, Shoreline Stories, visit wildscapeproduction.com. Stay tuned for our future episodes, as we have so much more in store for Wild and Unprotected.